Okay, this is the Magical Interactive Hour. We'll take your phone calls with Bruce Fenton as we talk about his incredible work called Exogenesis, Hybrid Humans. It's an amazing book, and the foreword is written by our buddy Eric von Däniken. And welcome back. Bruce Fenton's with us. George Norrie here. Bruce, Sitchin's work says that the ETs that came to seed us came from this planet in our solar system called Nibiru, which was on a 3,600-year elliptical orbit. In your thoughts, where do you think these ETs came from, who may have genetically manipulated us?
Yeah, I think it's much further away. And in my understanding, and this is not just from my research, but you'll find this story in culture around the world, that the connection is with the Pleiades, and that this the origin to this particular visitation is from the it starts out from a gateway in the Pleiades system. Now, I'm not saying that there are no other areas out there with beings that may be visiting us, because we hear all sorts of, you know, different ancient stories and, of course, modern contact cases. But there's an awful lot of information from particularly Aboriginals, indeed from Sumeria, also from the American, you know, Native Americans, but all over. You keep finding this story that the Seven Sisters, the Pleiades, is either the place of the ancestors or the place of some kind of human ancestry, and this is again and again. Now, I also wondered about this. This is something that quite recently there was a news story that came out about there possibly being, you know, that we've heard all about this. There's another planet in our solar system. You said that Planet X, but Planet 9, Planet X. Mm-hmm. So this research is still ongoing. And just recently, I saw an article where they suggested that what might be out there, instead of a planet, is possibly some kind of small black hole. Now, that made me think, because if the Planet X of Sitchin's theory was really a black hole, it could be that rather than coming from a planet, because, of course, I think now today we would get the idea of another planet, that maybe they're not coming from the planet, right? They're coming through a gateway.
Another universe, maybe. System.
Yeah, that is just the entrance. So what we thought was a planet, maybe a singularity, and that there's one in our solar system, and that is the connection point where they come through. Because it was always a bit of a, I'm sure you thought this, it's a strange idea there was another planet in our solar system with beings on it, and it just, there's a lot to that story that doesn't add up.
That's right.
But if that is a gateway, then suddenly that makes a lot more sense. But that's where they come in from, but it's not a planet, it's a singularity.
Are they what we would call the gods?
I'd have to say so. I think that once any civilization gets to a level of technology where it can do, you know, genetic manipulation on the scale we're talking about, you know, really farming a whole planet in some respects, that at that stage you would become godlike. On you know, you're able to do things that are just extraordinary. Open pathways through space-time, you know, create organisms. But at that stage, you know, from our perspective, it'd be godlike. Now, it's not the big G god, but it's certainly small G gods. And I think that, you know, it's definitely in there. And I think with the Sumerians and others, that when they talk about these gods, the Anunnaki, and which basically just those from the sky, you know, those who come from the sky, that they're not talking about necessarily one ET race, right? Because it's just like we use the word aliens, you know, Anunnaki would be those from the sky came. So, I mean, you're putting in there anyone who turns up here, you know, with advanced technology is going to be Anunnaki. Yeah, and if you look at their legends, you also find that they have different categories. They have human-like visitors.
Mm-hmm.
They've got models of reptilian-type visitors. And I think, you know, if you look around the world, that this is a theme. It doesn't seem to be just one group, right? And that's in the book as well. I do tackle the fact that I think that we have at least minimum two different parties involved in this story, one more negative than the other, you know, one that's very problematic, and another group that seemed to be, I don't want to say entirely benevolent, because they probably have their own self-interest, right? But, you know, like we do, you know, we're not entirely a benevolent species. But they are not evil, right? They're not out to destroy us. I think that there's definitely that same dynamic exists amongst extraterrestrial intelligences. You know, there's the good, bad, and the ugly.
Do you think the ETs that may have created us are still looking for that same thing we are, and that is who created them?
Well, one thing I do know from contact cases that there are a number of accounts where beings have said to us that they don't understand why we're not realizing our spiritual nature. You know, they seem to be very much concerned with the spiritual, right? Which is kind of funny that they, you know, sometimes they say to people that, you know, you're not remembering that you're really a spirit being. You're not just a human you know, here on Earth, that there's something much greater. So sometimes they almost take the role of cosmic evangelists, you know, that are trying to get us to question the nature of reality. And I see the beings in my book as being very much like that, that they express a kind of a want to do the work of a greater power. You know, and if we look at this from the context of Big G God, then everything is God's tools, right? There's nothing that's outside of God's influences and controls. That it is that these are utilized almost like tools to come here. You know, that the opposite side has tools. There's negative entities that come here, and they've done things. They've manipulated us. But then on the more positive side, there are tools of God that have come here and that have done the reverse, have tried to make things better, have tried to correct things that have been done to us. And so I think that we have that strange dynamic there. But there's definitely a spiritual aspect to this, and they seem to be very inclined towards spiritual understanding, at least the more positive ones. I mean, I'm having to caveat that, because I know there's a lot of horrible things that happen to people in certain contact and abduction cases, right, that it's not all good stuff.
All right, to the phones we go. Let's go to Bill, truck driving in California, to get us started. Hi, Bill. Welcome.
Hey, welcome. Hey, thanks, George. Hey, very interesting topic. I'll try to keep this as brief as possible. I disagree with you just a little bit, because I think we are definitely, human beings are definitely creatures of this planet. Case in point, the best evidence is if we go off this planet, we don't fare very well, right? At all. And I think something did happen with phylogeny, though, when, you know, the various organisms on the Earth start separating into phylum. Like, for instance, I'm really curious about the transition from a plant, the split between the plant and the animal kingdom. See, that's not so clear. And if you look at Precambrian fossils, they have elements of both plant and animal characteristics. So, you know, this conversation about a virus and what it is, it seems a little bit absurd. A virus, for lack of any better, you know, definition, is information. It's just information. I mean, and when you go from inorganic to organic, I mean, is it entirely possible that a virus could have been used, perhaps even manufactured, to modify the Precambrian life on this planet to eventually evolve a species that has consciousness? Consciousness seems to be the real key to me. I mean, why do we have consciousness? I mean, what's the purpose of it? And that's basically my question.
Well, that's an interesting question indeed. Why do we have it, Bruce?
Well, I'll answer that in two ways. Firstly, I'll say that, yeah, I also see us as being a terrestrial species. I'm definitely not saying that we are aliens that have arrived here or that are, you know, being brought here, which I know sometimes people do suggest, you know, that I see it as that we do evolve here, but there's been, you know, interventions, manipulations, but that we are definitely terrestrial in origin and evolution, right? I'm not going all the way to saying that we are aliens or, you know, something like that. And I know that people do sometimes suggest that. The second thing is, yeah, absolutely. I talk about this this process of viruses infecting organisms on Earth and bringing new information. You know, it's quite a chunk of one of the chapters in the book. And that, yeah, I suggest that modified retroviruses are used as tools to artificially accelerate evolution. So, you know, he's really spot on in terms of that's also my thinking. I believe that we've had these retroviruses that have been seeded into our atmosphere at different points in time by these intelligences, and that they rain down and they infect the organisms here, essentially bringing new information into the system and causing jumps in evolution. And that's not just my personal theory. As I say, you know, Professor Vikram Singha and his colleagues, they've also written a few papers on this, you know, so it's not just something I've, you know, pulled out of nowhere. And in terms of consciousness, you know, look, I believe, I'm not a materialist, you know, I think that consciousness underlies everything, that consciousness hasn't just come out of us having these big brains, that consciousness was primal, and that we are arising out of consciousness. So we've got to a certain level of complexity, we're able to look back at that and understand that we have consciousness, you know, but before that we had perception, we had awareness, but now we have this consciousness of who we are, what we are, because, but that's flowing up from the very foundations of reality, that now we're able to be that consciousness looking on back on itself because of the level of complexity we have in our biology as a result of these evolutionary forces, natural and unnatural, but that there was always that level of complex consciousness, which is fundamental. And that's why you can also have entities that are non-physical, and they also have consciousness, right? So if that's true, and I accept it is, because I've had experiences, and a lot of other people had, that then it doesn't seem you need a brain and a body. Because if a non-physical entity can also have consciousness, right, and communicate with you,
sure,
then it shows that you don't just need to be physical, and that the materialists are wrong, that, consciousness is first, it's not second.
Let's go to Joe, Long Island, New York. Go ahead, Joseph.
Bruce, two questions. First, say for the hybrid, say I'm a hybrid, I have five colors to my hair, I have an aggressive streak, and I don't know I'm a hybrid. I'm being hard on myself about these traits, maybe, and if I knew I was a hybrid, I could relax on it. Or if I'm an Olympian and I'm competing and I finish fifth in the 200-meter dash, and the top three people were hybrids, and I did the best I could, given that I'm not a hybrid.
But you won't win.
My first question. My second question is on technology transfer. Do you believe the pyramids were from a technology transfer, or did Eisenhower have a technology transfer, as it's rumored to be, with the aliens?
Okay. Well, in the first part there, I'd say in terms of recognizing our ancestry and knowing who we are, that there's definitely an issue there. I think part of what we see in this current history is a kind of an identity crisis. We have the rise of identity politics, and the who are we has gone to almost like an insane level, because now we have people asking, I want to be able to identify as a cat, or whatever I want to be. But I think there's a lot of confusion in who are we, what are we? And I think part of that is this knowing that somewhere in our DNA, our cellular information, that there is an untold story. There's a part of us that is trying to express itself and saying that we are not just what we've been told or not just what we think we are, that there's another part to us. And of course, if people think it's controversial to say that, I'm homosexual, they think it's controversial to say, I don't feel comfortable in my body. How uncomfortable would people feel saying, I think I'm an alien, or I think I have alien DNA? That's probably the most taboo thing you could sit down with your family, and say, with all the other ones people kind of complain about. I mean, imagine having that conversation, Mum, I feel that I'm an extraterrestrial. It's a real thing. I know loads of people out there, and I've had people contact me saying, I don't like to tell people, but I do feel that I'm a hybrid, or I do feel that I've had these encounters and I'm somehow different, or the beings have told them that, right? So that is something I think that we're going to have to start having that conversation as to what does that, why is it so many people feel that they are not just a normal terrestrial human, right? There's thousands of people out there, but they don't know where to express that without being called lunatics. So that's the first thing I'd say, is that that is an issue that needs to actually be discussed, no matter how strange it is. How that's going to happen, we'll see. In terms of the second part of the question, I think that when we look at the pyramids, I definitely am not in the camp who say that they're directly built by extraterrestrials. I'll just clarify that. But what I think we do have is an ongoing relationship between humans and extraterrestrial intelligences, interdimensional intelligences, spiritual intelligences, all of that. But we had an ongoing communication that was very direct in those times. And so there was a knowledge transfer in terms of, the shamans, the priests, the psychics, all these kind of people were able to get information directly from these intelligences. So you can say, hey, we want to build, we need this machine, or we need it to work like this. And they would be able to give input, saying, well, no, you need to put the resonance of this chamber has to be like this, and if you wanted to open a stargate, so you need to have this structure like this, and it has to be built on this energy line, that you don't need, a craft to land and get out, and they start helping you build. But what you do probably need is the information from them. And I think that we had if you look at the records, the people tell you this, they say they are in contact with something else, and that a lot of their information has come from that transfer. So I think we've had millennia of knowledge transfer through the interaction between our species and other intelligences, and that they have had an information impact on these structures. And that's why we have these incredible you know, aspects to the understanding of, you know, what the pyramid does. And, you know, I think most people now realize it's not just a tomb, that it has all these sonic properties. It has an ability to open up gateways. People have seen other worlds from the King's Chamber. They've gone into meditation, seen other worlds. And also has potential to being some kind of energy generator or energy transmitter. So clearly the knowledge that's gone into it is ahead of what we would imagine it would have been 5,000 years ago.
Bruce, do you think that this genetic visitation was done with multiple crafts that kept coming, or just one big one? They did their thing and left.
Well, actually, in my understanding of this, it's more a case of there was a presence on this planet alongside it. They've always been interacting,
right.
Not just one group.
Right.
That, and in fact, that before us, the early hominins, you know, I believe were a creation as well. That the reason why we have this split with primates is that a party of non-humans that were resident on this planet was manipulating them and created a kind of servile slave race type scenario, very much like what Sitchin says, but I would say much earlier, that when we go back 5 million years ago or so, that when we have these first, you know, very simple-minded early humans that were brains were not much bigger than a chimpanzee, that these were a kind of servile creation, and that then we had later this intervention event, which I write about in particular, but that around it is one thing that happens around 1.8 million years ago. We have a sudden upgrade to humans, which I believe has been done by this first group, which are negative, sort of reptilian types, which obviously everyone knows has heard about them, whether they believe in them or not, but they're in all the legends, all the lore of the planet, that they upgrade it to a slightly more intelligent human, but still servile. And then around about 780,000 years ago, we have this event, which is another group that are coming here to essentially, they believe there's going to be a handover, that they're going to take back control of the planet through negotiations. There's an ambush, their ship is destroyed, and the survivors are the ones that do the upgrade, and they decide that they can't colonize here and take over, but they will essentially carry on the mission of Plan B. They will then transfer to us skills that they had, the brain, the anatomy. They make us in their image, essentially acting almost like a tool of the, well, they see it as a spiritual mission as well. So they're acting almost like a tool of Big G God, that they are feeling that they are, in some respect, fixing some of the damage that is done to our species and upgrading us in a way, not fully, we're not perfect, but they are fixing some of this damage. And that's when we have this big jump from being, you know, a servile, small-brained, very simple human, till suddenly we get this complex brain, new anatomy, and become early Homo sapiens.
Indeed. Let's take a quick call and then the break. Linda in Spokane, Washington. Hi, Linda.
Hi, George. Good morning.
Morning. I might hold you over if we don't get your question in, but give it a shot. Go ahead.
Okay, it's a short one. I wanted to ask Mr. Fenton if he's familiar with Enki and Enlil. They were the heads of the Anunnaki.
And apparently brothers. Zechariah Sitchin has written about them, Bruce.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do have some knowledge. I think that I have some suspicions about this. Again, when we have this story of these, you know, these brothers and the Anunnaki, and as I said earlier, I think Anunnaki, we're talking about any extraterrestrials that came. And if you look in the Sumerian civilization, there's a huge focus on the Pleiades. And I think people miss this sometimes, but the seven stars are shown repeatedly. And in fact, you know, they've got an Ishtar and so that relates to the Pleiades. The symbol of the Pleiades is used repeatedly. They have seven ships that fly around, funnily enough, like the seven stars. And this comes up again and again. And there's a friend of mine, Leonard Farah, that has a series of books on this. And he very convincingly puts the case that most of the Anunnaki that we're talking about have a link back to the Pleiades. But I also think the Anunnaki is covering that reptilian side. You have two groups, again, the negative and the positive. And that they are also in them. I suspect when we have the Enki Enlil story, this idea that there's two brothers from space, that they're not the same. They don't want the same things for humans, right? That we are talking again about...
Well, that is so true. Bruce, we're going to take a break and come back with final calls next on Coast to Coast AM. Well, stick with us all week long. We've got some great programs for you on our next Coast to Coast program. David Cereda joins us to talk about the U.S. Navy and UFOs as well. And then, of course... we will have David Adair on Wednesday, and we'll be talking with Mark Jacobson on Thursday about William Cooper, Behold the Pale Horse, And then Friday, of course, those special Friday night into Saturday morning open lines, but we'll also be talking about a haunted hospital as well. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Our very special guest is with us, Bruce Fenton. His book is Hybrid Humans. Bruce, that book and The Forgotten Exodus, can people pick that up where? Amazon, bookstores, where is it available?
Yeah, I mean, they should be able to go, if bookstores are open near them, they should be able to go in, and if it's not on the shelves, at the very least, they'll be able to, ask for it, and it will be ordered for them. I don't know if bookshops are even open, to be honest.
Yeah, that's true.
Who knows? But if not, then, yeah, they can go on the online, the websites of any of their favorite bookstores and order that book. Yeah, it's definitely on Amazon and Borders, and all the big online stores. And if they want a signed copy, they can email me directly, which is bruce@brucefenton.info. Obviously, it's post and package for that if they want to get it from the UK, sent to them. But otherwise, yeah, all of the online stores and stuff is available.
In your opinion, are we still being monitored by these ETs?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think if you look at the accounts of the Watchers, I think that kind of sums it up, that they are watching, right? That this is what we're talking about when we talk about the Watchers. These are these particular intelligences that have been here the whole time that they monitor and that they do sometimes get involved. What I would compare it to is the Cold War situation we have down here. If you think of as above, so below, as your last guest referred to,
yeah.
I think this is something we have that's going on, that we have down here. We have a kind of a Cold War between East and West, and let's be honest, that's been going on a long time. And you can even go back to the Crusades, you could say. But there's a kind of there's a divide on Earth. Also, I think that we have a Cold War in the cosmos between two very powerful collectives, and that we are in the middle of this. That there's a also on a spiritual level, people say the good and evil, non-physical entities. I think that we have a kind of weird parallel here, but that is the same there. And I think these things are always watching, and that they do, there's a game playing out where we're in the middle and it's playing out through us, but that there's two different teams behind that, right, that are not always seen, but are watching and sometimes meddling.
Bruce Fenton, our special guest, his book, Hybrid Humans. Websites are all linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Mike in Denver, Colorado gets us rolling here. Hey, Michael.
Hey, George. Good morning. Thank you so much for taking my call. And, first of all, I just want to send my thoughts and prayers to the, officers that were shot tonight in St. Louis.
Thank you. Hoping
for a peaceful resolution to all this. I think it's gone far enough. Mr. Fenton, thank you so much for all your work. I really appreciate your insight into extraterrestrial affairs. And my question kind of relates to the Vatican and extraterrestrials. So there's been much speculation, obviously, for a long time surrounding the Vatican's involvement with ETs and how far back that their involvement goes with certain extraterrestrials and kind of what their scope of cooperation with them is. And I just was interested if you had any insight into that. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks. I'm sure I can give some thoughts on that. Yeah, certainly. If we look at the history of the Catholic Church and obviously expansions into the New World and elsewhere, that we know that they had access to all kinds of ancient knowledge. We know that they retrieved books and tablets and all sorts of information in which would be accounts of these star gods and the understanding of, say, the Mayans and the Aztecs. People believe that there was a cosmic aspect. So I don't think it's been any secret to the Vatican that there is an ongoing contact. Now, what is their own personal position? I personally suspect that they, the higher levels, that there is some kind of interaction, or at least a inner cult that is seeing it as a worship of some of these star gods, because we see even like the mitre hat, which goes back to the Sumerian, the fish hat, and Oannes, the god that comes out of the sea that teaches people. But there's these very obvious links. So I suspect that we have a cabal or a cult within the higher parts of the church, which the average person wouldn't be involved with. They're just doing their practices. But that there is a group there that believes that the church is about these entities and is engaged with them. And that's my personal position. I suspect that very much some of them are directly involved in that.
Let's go to Ed in Charlotte, North Carolina. Hello, Edward.
Hey, George. I really enjoy when you have your mom on, and
Thank you.
She sounds so much younger than her age. And
she sure does. She sure does.
Complete command of her mind and not one molecule of any dementia, Alzheimer's, which is a blessing.
Sharp as a tack.
Yep. I wanted to ask Mr. Fenton the fact that the mitochondria in our body provides 80% of our energy to blink our eyes and organs and all that. And I didn't know until somewhat recently, I think most people probably have no idea, that that it's not our own DNA, that mitochondria have their own DNA. And that makes me, I wanted to get your opinion. Does that lend itself more to being maybe engineered into us, and see what you thought about it?
Yeah, no, that's a good point. Yeah, the mitochondria is, you know, it's a sort of addition into an organism at some point in evolutionary history, although, of course, now a very crucial one. The ins and outs of how that occurred, I don't know. I mean, it may well be right in terms of that it could be to do with early meddling in other ancestral organisms, you know, that we wouldn't. I mean, there's all sorts of strange things in our genome, since we have evidence of various retroviruses that have infected us. We have, there's one of our main, I think the placenta, the human placenta comes from some kind of strange, like a viral infection and stuff at some point in our history, bringing information from another organism. So, I mean, yeah, I can't speak directly, because I can only say that, yeah, again, it's one of these strange parts of the evolutionary story which make you wonder how much meddling has been going on, even from long before there were primates, you know, any of that, that there may have been all kinds of manipulating to get us to this point where we have intelligent life like us and dolphins and elephants and all the rest, that to get to that, a lot of more subtle, strange changes have occurred.
The panspermia theory, Bruce, where life may have formed on a comet or an asteroid, could it still have been sent here that way by an ET?
Yeah, actually, I made a short YouTube video on that topic a couple of years back because, you know, we had this object Oumuamua that came through the solar system.
Now they say it could be all hydrogen ice, by the way, that object.
Well, yeah, it could be. The funny thing about that, though, was that the way they said, you know, that it seemed to be spinning end over end, right, and that there was this suspicion that maybe it wasn't entirely a normal object. Now, of course, we've had some scientists that say, you know, to comment, some say it's something very strange, maybe a probe. But one of the things that occurred to me was that, you know, if this was something that was carrying retrovirus, you know, modified retrovirus, this end-over-end spinning, you know, if it was releasing these spores, it would be spinning them out into, you know, all directions, and that at some point, the funny thing was it passed the plane of our solar system between Mars and Earth, which are the two, you know, habitable planets, right? Which is a funny thing that it just happens to cross the plane of our solar system between those two planets. Now, if it was spinning out these spores, within a year or two, we would pass through that cloud. So, I mean, could that be? And again, that was calculated to have maybe come from the direction of the Pleiades, funnily enough. So could it be that objects like that, you know, bring in new information? So, yeah, I think it could be done in that way, that it doesn't need to be, you know, the ET, you know, arriving a craft. You know, there may be different groups that have done things in different ways. You know, that sometimes we have an object passes through and it releases retroviruses, and other times we have more direct interventions. So I think both can be true.
Let's go to Valerie in New York. Hi, Val. Go ahead.
Yes, hi. Yeah, when you were talking about the people having discompatibilities and stuff, like, I was just thinking about it like 3 minutes before, and because I'm O negative blood, and myself and other friends that are O negative,
that's rare.
Maybe we're less monkey than other people because we don't have the RH.
You're a hybrid, Valerie.
Yeah, right. So I'm trying to figure out what the benefits are, but I was just thinking it was strange that if we have a baby, if we're carrying a baby, the first baby may be okay, but the blood mixes when you're having the baby. And then so by the time the next, if you have another baby, you will have antibodies against RH positive, if your baby was RH positive, right? I thought how strange it is that your blood should attack your baby's blood. And I was wondering if animals do that, and then you said like about 3 minutes later, they don't, right? But I was wondering if we're like less monkey at all, if you have no RH factor.
And what's so unusual about the RH factor, Bruce?
Yeah, I mean, this is a question. Look, this is a question that is put to me, you know, every now and again, because, of course, you know, as you're aware, there's books on this topic, you know, that entirely on the topic of RH negative blood, and you know whether or not that's indications of alien manipulation. Now, one of the first thing I say, one of the problems with this is that conventional science literally just does not currently understand how the blood groups came about or when exactly they all came about. We only know that AB is the most recent. You know, we're not entirely sure which one came first. And that means it's really impossible at the moment to say, you know, what is the original, you know, most natural, if you like, blood type. And that means that we can't really then say, oh, such and such is the alien the modified one, and that this is the more natural one, because at the moment, nobody actually knows which one's the oldest. So that's the first thing I'd say. So we can't say that RH negative means that, you know, you were recently modified, or conversely, that it's the oldest one, because nobody knows. The second thing is, we have to be careful, because I know that sometimes there's a confusion, because it's called rhesus negative, that it is not to do with rhesus monkeys. The reason why it's called that is that they first detected a similar antigen in rhesus monkeys, and they used the name, but it is nothing to do with us, you know, having a direct relationship with rhesus monkeys. I mean, they split off from any shared evolution with us something like 20 million years ago or so, you know, so we really have nothing to do with them. It's just a convention, you know, they use that name, and that's caused a lot of confusion in the community. Well, for anyone, because you think rhesus monkeys, you assume it's a direct connection, right? Something to do with being related to them, but it's not. Also, there's something more interesting than rhesus negative blood. Keep in mind that if you're RH negative, it's only missing one rhesus type antigen, and there's something like, I don't know, it's a lot of them.
Yeah.
Right? So it doesn't mean you don't have any rhesus antigens. There's just one that's very important, because if that one is present, you end up with these reproduction issues. But there is actually a blood type that's called the golden blood, and that has none of the RH antigens, and that is really rare. They've only found 50 people so far that are actually what they call RH null, where you have no rhesus antigens. Now, that is a strange blood type. I mean, 50 people in the world have it, and it is, you know, you can use it as a transfusion for anyone, because there's no way it can interact, right? So, and they actually thought that was impossible. They thought people would die if they were, you know, conceived with RH null blood. It turns out that you can have it, and that's the, I think, you know, perhaps that's the original one. Perhaps that's the unaltered one, or something like that. But it's incredibly rare, and that's something I'd ask. Go away. If you're interested in that topic, go and look at RH null blood, because that's strange.
Let's go to Dennis in Valencia, California, first-time caller. Hi, Dennis.
Good morning, gentlemen. How are you doing?
Good morning. Great.
Great. Yeah, my question had to do with the opinion of scientists concerning the existence of a god or God versus those who don't. And there was a survey done back in 1916 given to scientists of various disciplines, including physicists, biologists, and others of that rank. In order, and they said that 47% said there is a God whom they can communicate with and expect an answer. And then that same survey was done verbatim in 1997, and the same amount of scientists claimed to be able to communicate and pray to a God and they would expect an answer from him. And I'm wondering what your thoughts are on that. And the second part of the question that I wanted to ask is Nietzsche, about 50 years earlier, had claimed that God was dead. In other words, that the people of his day, born out of the Enlightenment, had killed the God of the Bible, the Christian God. And as a result, there would be no moral order, or no order, or there'd be chaos, uncontrollable chaos in the universe. And I wanted to get your thoughts on that, because today we see a lot of chaos over the world.
Well, we sure are.
And there's no control, there's no hope beyond what we see. And yet the scientists would have to agree that if there is no hope beyond what we can see, then there's really no hope at all.
Most scientists do not believe in a God, Bruce. That's a given fact.
Well, I mean, it's certainly not as clear as the media spins it to us, because there was a survey that was done about, and I know the guest obviously talked, sorry, your caller talked about surveys, but I used to work for an organization called the Scientific and Medical Network. They're doing their online presence. And they are a network of scientists and doctors and people who are also spiritually inclined, you know, and are interested in psychic phenomena and all of that kind of stuff. Now, they ran a survey, and it turned out that out of these, the engineers and scientists and all these people who usually get spun as being that they must be atheists, right, it was actually quite a split. It was almost half-half. It turned out that this idea that we get from the mainstream media that, you know, these are all atheists and you can't be a real scientist and be spiritual and religious, turned out it is not panned out. When you actually survey, they found it was about half of the engineers and scientists that actually said, no, actually, you know, I would say that I'm either religious or deeply spiritual. And I think that's something that has been almost deliberately giving us the wrong impression, right, George? Because we would all have been,
that's right,
most
that's
of
right.
them, 90% are atheists. But it turned out it wasn't the case at all, and most people who are religious or spiritual are quite able to go on and do their scientific work without putting their faith or their beliefs, you know, into that mix, but also would come out of work and say, well, no, I still go to church or I have my own beliefs, you know. So that, I thought, was quite interesting. So it turns out that even in the sciences, God isn't dead, right? And that, yeah, we should, yeah, be aware that that's maybe a wrong impression that we're getting given by the media.
I'm sure God is very much alive, Bruce. We just need a little help. Bruce, thank you for being such a great guest. Stay in touch. What's your next work? What are you working on next?
Well, I'm going to be, I think, tackling the Younger Dryas period, the Göbekli Tepe, the lost civilizations, and
super
early humans into America, that area. I'm very interested. I've got some work.
All right. When your work is done with that, just get back on the show again, and let's have you back on. Bruce Fenton, he was live in the United Kingdom. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesour, Stephanie Smith, Chris Burrows, Tim Banal, Ian Punnett, and George Knapp, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.